Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Friday morning at 1:15 a.m. Eastern Time. Joining me from New York City, where he went to the Nets-Sixers game a few hours ago. Nothing happened that game, Mr. Tim Bontemps.
I really jinxed myself by saying many times over the past couple of weeks that this series was going to be and was incredibly boring. I mean, I got all that back for me and then some tonight because I had to deal with a whole bunch of nonsense.
Joining us on an off night, he's covering the Grizzlies Lakers series, but an off night for him is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Took a little pit stop at home, had some laundry to do and some people to smooch up a little bit.
All right. Listen, you do what you got to do.
There was not a lot of smooching going on in Brooklyn tonight. That's for sure. Everybody is very unhappy.
Well, all right. We had an interesting three games on Thursday night. Obviously, the one that was probably most important, Kings Warriors, was the least interesting, as it turned out. But I feel like we should probably. Well, we'll start with your game, Bontem.
No, let's start. That's the headliner game. Let's get it out of the way. Warriors Kings.
All right. So,
Steph saves the day.
Yeah. So, well, I gotta say. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, and Kevon Looney.
Well, and Kevon Looney, who was terrific. I mean, look, coming into this game with no Draymond Green, I felt like the Warriors were gonna win because I thought Steph Curry, an all-time great player, was gonna step up and deliver a win at home. And he stepped up and played great. And Kevon Looney, who has been the unsung hero of this Warriors run for years. You talk to people with the Warriors. Kevon Looney's first 2 years in his career, he had one hip labrum injury, and then he had the other one. He basically didn't play for, I think, his entire first 2 years of his career. And he now has become one of the more durable players in the league. He played, I think, every game last year. He played just about every game this year. And
they drafted his replacement.
Yes. Right. James Wiseman was supposed to be his replacement and now is gone.
Yeah. And then traded him for three deflated basketballs.
Yeah. I mean, people around that team, like you ask them who their favorite guy on the team is, they basically all say Kevon Looney because of his character and worth ethic and the amount of stuff he's fought through. And for him to step up the way he did today says a lot about him and a lot about his role on that team to step up and deliver the way he did.
20 rebounds, nine assists, plus 21 in 30 minutes, and was exhausting himself, like working so hard on Sabonis that he was exhausting himself. Nine offensive rebounds, which Jackson is telling us is the most offensive rebounds in a playoff game since Kevon Looney.
I think that was against the Mavericks because he was awesome. Like basically the Mavericks went out and said, hey, we've got to sign a rim protecting rebounding big man because Kevon Looney kicked their butt so bad. And they've still got to sign that guy because JaVale McGee wasn't the answer, but neither here nor there.
Well, he did the same thing in the NBA Finals too. He threw the Celtics around for six games and was a huge part of why Golden State won that series. They couldn't keep him off the glass then either.
Yeah, and look, the Warriors, the trend continues. Awesome at home, not very good on the road. It will surprise nobody if this thing's 2-2 going back to Sacramento.
Well, okay, before we get to that, once again, the Warriors played good defense. Now, good defense at home.
Right.
This is what they do. Number 3 defense at home, number 28 on the road. The Kings were ice cold from three-point range tonight, 11 of 47. But the Warriors, other than Steph, weren't hot either. The Warriors, 16 of 50. There was 97 threes taken in this game. Holy Moses. Steph was
Moses Maloney. And then what they call
Who?
Moses Maloney. That's what they call him,
last
right?
year in the playoffs. Yes. Yeah. This is right over Brian's head.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Moses Malone, you're the greatest offensive rebounder in the history of the NBA. It's a play on Kevon Looney's name. It's not that hard.
I mean, I know Moses Malone, it's probably one of the most untouchable records in sports, his offensive rebound record, but I'd never heard it, Moses Malone. I'd never heard that.
Bontemps, okay, I'm pretty sure Wendy told us about that last year.
We talked about this multiple times during the playoffs last year.
All right, fine. On this spot. We're moving on. I'll accept guilt. Fine. I'm guilty. It's not worth it. The Kings, you know, shot 38%, 23% on threes, only 97 points. I mean, I mean, that's just without Draymond Green, who's their best defensive player. I think the, you know, there's a bunch of different ways you can look at this stat, but the stat that I had from our SIG group was that when Draymond played, the Warriors ranked third in defensive field goal percentage allowed. And when he didn't play, when he wasn't on the floor, they were 25th. And then Gary Payton, who is obviously one of their key situational defensive players, a guy who they would put on De'Aaron Fox. You know, he was on De'Aaron Fox down the stretch of the game.
Might have started today if he was available.
That's true. He was out. He's been dealing with an ankle injury, but he's also out sick, which I have to assume he was very, very sick to miss this game. So I don't know where that leaves him for game four. But, you know, that was not a good development for the Warriors defensively to have two of their best defensive players not available. And then they still hold him to 97. I mean, that's pretty much the story of
well,
the game.
And Malik Monk had a total dud. He was awesome in game one, 32 points. Pretty good and not an efficient 18 points in game two, but still scored 18. And tonight, 4 points, 1 of 9 shooting. He's got to be really good for the Kings to win. And tonight he wasn't. You know who was really good, though? And this is big for this series and potentially moving forward. Andrew Wiggins looked like the guy who was a star during the championship run last year. You know, his minutes are back in the mid-30s, 20 points officially, you know, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. Obviously, the guy is going to be an impact on the defensive end. That, to me, is one of the bigger developments is that, you know, Wiggins looks – he doesn't look like a guy who missed 2 months. He looks like the guy who was – one of the key parts of a title run last year.
Yeah, he's looked really good, really since game one of the series for me. I mean, he came right in, played 28 minutes off the bench game one, started game two, looked pretty good, I thought, in game two, looked good again today. Like, that's, to your point, McMahon, that's a huge thing for them going forward. And look, for Sacramento, like, obviously, I think as a neutral, I am happy that the Warriors won this game because the story of the series is not going to be about Draymond Green being suspended. But for Sacramento, this is a huge missed opportunity. Just like Wednesday was a huge missed opportunity for the Lakers with Ja Morant, right? That was a chance for the Lakers to really put a hammer lock on that series. They failed to do it. Tonight, the Kings had a chance to put this thing away, and they let the defending champs get off the mat. And we'll see if it comes back to bite them or not. But you don't necessarily get a lot of opportunities to take a team like this out like this. And they didn't take advantage of it.
Normally, in a situation like this, I would say that whoever wins game four probably wins the series. I've seen series like this a lot of times, and I can't quite say that because the Warriors are so Jekyll and Hyde home road. I feel like if given two more chances in five and seven, that they could get one, but they have not earned that confidence.
I thought if Golden State won this game, they're going to win the next three. So we'll see if they do.
Oh, that's bold.
I thought this was, to me, this was the Kings' opportunity. They played well in the two games at home. They win this game tonight. The series is over. They let these guys get off the mat. Because here's the thing. I didn't think Golden State played that bad in those two games at Sacramento. Like, game one was basically a tie game. Andrew Wiggins gets a wide open three to win it. Misses it. But great shot.
To tie it.
Or Steph. A tie.
I thought it would have put him ahead.
It would have put him ahead. Steph had the shot at the buzzer.
Steph had the shot to tie it after that. And then I thought the Warriors were coming back in game two when Draymond got thrown out. Like, they had all the momentum. Steph was flying through, was slicing through their defense. Like, so it wasn't like they were playing terrible to me in Sacramento.
I'll say this. Fourth quarter Fox was pretty strong in game two.
I think it's fair to say that
once Draymond left the game, the Warriors offense short-circuited and
I think
fell
it's
apart.
Fair to say that regardless of what's happened, it's not far away from being 2-1 Warriors. I think that's a fair statement.
Right. Right. I just think the win in Sacramento to me felt like it was coming. And if they got off the mat today, I thought they're going to come back and win the series, but that's no knock on the Kings. They've more than acquitted themselves, and it's going to be a hell of a series. We'll see what happens.
I mean, there's a reason why the saying is old, that a series doesn't start until somebody wins on the other team's floor. Obviously it's not always true. Obviously if a team with home court doesn't have win, I mean, but it's indicative of how a series is played. That saying exists for a reason. And that saying is applicable probably to where we're at in this series right now. So we'll see also the demeanor that Draymond has when he comes back, what he's, what he's able to give, whether or not that ends up being a rally.
He'll be fresh.
I suspect Draymond is going to have a monster game in game four.
For sure. And I suspect that the Kings, that was the one thing I thought about coming into this game, was that with what happened, it kind of put the Kings in a situation where it's kind of, the stakes are much higher than just a normal game three. Because now that they lose, as you said, now Golden State has won and won a game that in theory they shouldn't have won. So, but clearly they played, they were the better team.
Well, you know what happened? So, you know what I really thought the key to this game was? When the Chase Center announced that cowbells would not be allowed, that was that.
Well,
that was very absurd.
I think it was an edict from Bob Myers, their general manager, who had a fan the other night. Did you see that video that went?
No, I didn't see this.
Did you see it, McMahon?
I did not.
So
did he have a little cowbell ringing on his?
He had a fan in his face?
Not in his face, like 1 foot behind his head.
Oh.
He was sitting, typically league executives, they sit in sort of the middle of the stands, like, seven, eight, mm-hmm. 10 rows up. And there was, I assume that the Kings fan knew who Bob Myers was. But he was ringing that bell like crazy, like inches behind his head, inches. And at least in this clip that was out there, Bob did not even turn around. And
the man has had Draymond Green on his roster for how many years? Like, he's probably pretty good at tuning out some noise.
Right. The guy was going with both hands. He was ringing that thing with both
hands. Jackson just sent me this clip. I'm pulling it up right now. Oh yeah. Got Mike Dunleavy and Bob Meyer sitting there, not even flinching.
This guy's
bonkers.
This is impressive.
And you Kirk Lake up there too. Got the whole crew of guys there.
Dunleavy is composing, or is that Kirk? Is that Kirk or
Dunleavy sitting in it? Dunleavy sitting down, typing out a text. Kirk is. I know what the text says. And Bob isn't moving.
The text is to Chase Center Operations. Please issue a statement banning cowbell for Game Three. Sincerely, Golden State Warriors front office.
God bless those guys for not moving though. That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I remember. When the Heat would, when Riley does, I'm sure they still do. The Heat, Riley, during every timeout, Riley would stand up. He'd be sitting behind the bench, and Riley, he couldn't hear or see into the huddle, but he would stand up. Riley, Andy Ellisberg, and Alonzo Mourning. And it kind of annoyed fans sometimes that, that he'd stand up, but Alonzo Mourning kind of ends that discussion here.
Well, Alonzo Mourning and Pat Riley, both.
Nobody well, right, but like, I'm either. Just saying that, like,
you ain't gonna say Alonzo much to Zoe.
No,
if Alonzo Mourning was doing that standing there, I suspect the cowbell might not have been. So, no offense to Mike Dunleavy. I mean, he's a impressive man, but he's not a lot.
Him and Bob Myers are both solid 6'7", 6'8", but they ain't Alonzo Mourning.
That's true. And Alonzo has sort of a resting, don't mess with me face. I think, but anyway, so we will see what happens in game four. That now becomes super pivotal. Unfortunate that this game wasn't as intense as games one and two. It was the least intense game of the night, but
more Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Guys, it's all about confidence. Confidence knowing you'll be able to be ready to go when your partner is, and confidence knowing you'll be able to go a few extra rounds when needed. Confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form. and at a fraction of the cost. And now they also have Vardafil, mint-flavored chewables with active ingredients in Levitra and Staxin. Blue Chew tablets are performance enhancement for the bedroom and can help men gain extra confidence when it's time to perform. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com. Consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Don't like swallowing pills? No problems. Blue Chew's Sildenafil and Tildenafil tablets are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and they prepare to ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code HOOP at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code HOOP to receive your first month free. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Okay, so Bontemps, your game, the Nets.
Was it a game? Is it fair to call it a game? It was more just like a nonstop wrestling match for 3 hours.
Well, look, let me tell you something. When the league suspends Draymond under the circumstances what they suspended him for, they are asking for trouble.
They sure are. And they got it.
The way other players are going to react.
I hear what you're saying. Also, they made it very clear Draymond's history was the reason he got suspended.
Well, but here's
let's leave the little violins at home and recognize that Draymond put himself in this situation.
No. That's not what Brian's saying. What Brian's saying is because of how the league has legislated these flagrant fouls, you now have a situation where on virtually any time there is a foul, there are attempts by the player who was fouled to try to get a review to turn it into a flagrant foul.
I hear that. I'm just saying, let's not be too sympathetic towards Draymond, where there's been a lot of that.
I'm just saying,
overboard.
Like, okay. So two, is it 3 minutes into the game? Nick Claxton, Embiid drives with the ball, falls on the ground. Nick Claxton steps over him.
Fouled by Claxton.
Okay.
Yeah. On the play.
Claxton steps over him.
Mm-hmm. Tried to bait him. And,
yep. They know that the way to get a guy neutralized is to get him kicked out or suspended.
There's one thing that should be reminded here. Back in January in the Ben Simmons game, the one time Ben Simmons has actually played in Philadelphia as a Net, the real tussle that obviously Embiid and Simmons guard each other at the beginning of the game. People remember that. Mm. The thing people don't remember is during that game, Embiid and Claxton got double technicals because Claxton and Embiid got after it. Embiid said after the game, Claxton said some stuff he wouldn't repeat later and whatever. It became a thing.
Right.
So those two guys already have a history, and that's before it's 2-0 Philly. Mm-hmm. And Embiid has dominated the interior the past two games. So all that is prior context to Claxton committing this foul and then staring down Embiid and stepping over, leading up to what happened after that.
And then Embiid kicks up at his groin. He didn't hit his groin. I don't know if that was.
I think he might have hit the groin. He did not hit the cojones.
He hit him in the back of the leg.
Those are not your groin. You're using as a euphemism, but they're neighbors, but they're separate body parts.
Thank you for that clarification. He hit Claxton in the back of the leg and didn't even hit him really that hard, which is why I thought before they announced the review, it was going to be a friend of ours who's a scout texted me who was at the game, said, what do you think this is going to be? I said, they think they're going to call Claxton for a tech for taunting. And I think they're going to call Embiid for a flagrant one because he didn't really connect that hard. even though it was obvious he had intent behind what he was doing.
Okay, right. But here's the thing. Because of what's happened with guys who've been hitting the groin, there's been multiple suspensions over the years for that.
Sure.
And because Claxton went down, there was a mortal wound. And, you know, I don't want to call anybody out because I don't know how certain things felt, but it wouldn't be the first time this week a guy, you know, took a shot and acted as if it was, you know.
Well, here's the thing about it. Do you, McMahon, I know Brian, you thought it was a flagrant too, right?
I was surprised. I was surprised they because it was so blatantly that he
either way, it was a borderline call. You thought it was flagrant two, not stunned. It's a flagrant one. McMahon, did you think it was a flagrant one or flagrant two?
I thought there were definitely flagrant two intentions and flagrant one execution.
That's basically where I came down. I thought he should have stayed in the game because he didn't connect really. He sort of grazed him, whatever.
But so here's it's like the thing. You tried to kick him in the nuts, but because you have bad aim, like just because he's not as good a kicker as Draymond Green.
I would have been fine if I think it was a borderline call. You could have gone either way. We seem to all agree on that, right?
Okay. Sure.
This James Harden ejection later in the game.
All right, hold on. We'll get to
hold on. Right. Well, I'm just this.
It's Wendy's. I don't know when Wendy's on the cartoon, bro. When he says, "Hold on, you got
to
stand."
I had to watch this game, and I had to deal with this all day. This James Harden ejection. Every single person on press row was flabbergasted when they said,
"I'm gonna tell you why." Because after the events of the last few days, the fact that they gave Embiid a flagrant one. Mm-hmm. Even though it wasn't Tony Brothers, who was the crew chief in this game's decision to suspend Draymond, he is the figurehead for the NBA authority. Because of what had just happened, the overwhelming response, especially I'm sure within the building there in Philadelphia, in Brooklyn, was that was a miscarriage. Okay. And so that was just hanging in the air. All right. At halftime. Not that I'm saying the referees are watching.
He kicked at something that was hanging.
Yeah, you could have made a carriage joke there too.
I opted out of that one.
Good job. You got Charles Barkley and Shaq saying he should have been kicked out. You know, again, not that the crew chiefs was watching that, but I mean, they're sort of setting the agenda.
I did not expect the 1990s inside crew to start saying that there should be ejections from games too. I went to watch to see what they'd have to say. And I was like, this is not what I expected.
It was 24 hours after one of the bad boys suspended Draymond.
Yeah. Right.
Strange week in the league.
Okay. So go ahead, Bontemps. Then we have,
So then at the end of the third quarter, James Harden has Royce O'Neal on him and sort of just shoves him. Listen, at first I couldn't honestly tell where the foul was. Like, I saw the play, Royce O'Neal goes down, they call this offensive foul. James Harden looks surprised. I was like, all right, I didn't see a lot of contact there. Then I'm watching the review. I honestly couldn't really tell what happened at first. I mean, it looked like he hit him in the stomach, but
he hit Royce O'Neal right in the double zeros.
I thought he hit him higher than that, personally. I didn't think he hit him that low. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I watched the replay a bunch of times, and I was like, this looks like a common foul. And then they come back and announce it's a flagrant two.
On that one, I can't be certain that – obviously, O'Neal wanted everybody to think that he got hit in the cojones. I'm not sure if he did or not, but on that one – I thought that it was common foul to potentially flagrant one intentions. I think Harden might have been meaning to hit him like in the stomach.
Well, Harden was hanging on him. He was hanging on him and he pushed
Harden
him off.
He was definitely for sure. But he did it with like a fist. I mean, I think he was definitely meaning to give him a shot. And that might have been flagrant one intentions and flagrant two execution. Or maybe
you should write a dissertation on this.
I'm stunned. You think this is a flagrant two? I don't know anybody and nobody at the game.
So here's what I think. Okay, so over the last couple of years, where we review everything where the guy lays on the ground, many many times you see a foul and you're like, okay, that's a foul, and then they review it and they come back and say flagrant one. Mm-hmm. That happens like how many times? And we've just become accustomed to. All right, well, he's going to get a flagrant one because he laid on the ground. And that's what I thought was going to happen there. I thought he was going to you know, lay on the ground his way to a flagrant one. And it wasn't going to be the worst, even though the game was very competitive, it wasn't going to be the worst call ever. Right. So for them to take those two plays and, you know, appear to go soft on the first one and then overboard on the second one, affecting the same team, it just didn't look good. So after the game, Bontemps, Tony Brothers, the crew chief, gives a pool report. What does he say?
Well, he didn't even have to give the pool report because they have Bonnie McCutchen, his boss, on immediately after the play. And he said, well, James Harden hit him in the groin intentionally, and that's why he got ejected from the game, which is later what Tony Brothers said. I still don't think he actually hit him in the groin. I still am stunned that he got a flagrant two. And by the way, like, the Sixers are trying to have a long playoff run. If you get four flagrant foul points, you get suspended for a game. James Harden now has two. Like, that's not an insignificant thing. And, like, I just thought this was an insane call. Like, if you told me that Embiid got ejected, I would have understood it. That was a borderline call. I could have seen a flagrant two. I thought it was a flagrant one, especially because it's a playoff game. And he got sort of goaded into it. Whatever. Either way, it would have been fine. I think this Harden thing is crazy. And I just, to me, it's just
guess
indicative.
Who else thought it was crazy? Harden. Harden thought it was crazy.
Well, Harden after. Well, but I have sympathy for Harden on this one. I cannot believe he got ejected for this play. I think it's wild. It's a wild decision. Like, to me, it should get rescinded. It should get taken down to a flagrant one on Friday by the league, which I'm sure it's not going to after this. But no, I don't know how they can, with a straight face, say that this is a flagrant two play.
All right. Well, then let me say this. So this then midway through the fourth, Claxton gets ejected for a second technical.
Well, this was the dumbest thing of all time. Nick Claxton, I'm sorry. Like, he has this dunk on Embiid, and then he runs over to Embiid and stares him down and clearly taunts him, which is the easiest technical. Tony Brothers sprinted across the gym and was just, see ya. Just immediately yeah, flinging him out of the
right game. On his heels of saying see ya. Embiid was saying see ya too. Oh,
I mean, Nick Claxton was having a good game, and like, they're up in the game, I think 6 or 8 points at that point. Like, just a colossally stupid play by him. Just, you cannot
and
be
especially
doing that.
I mean, it's just, it's stupid anyway, but especially when you know that you've got no interior way to slow down Embiid, and you're the best option. Right. And so like, they're running De'Ron Sharpe out there, who's really a borderline even center on a good day, much less dealing with a 7'2" behemoth.
Right.
So, but I will say this, the crazy thing is, as if that's not all enough, because it was a back and forth game, is that Harden is out. And so that means the ball's in Tyrese Maxey's hands coming down the stretch. Embiid's having a dog game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was just due. I don't know. He kind of fell on his knee.
His knee was bothering him. His back was bothering him. His foot was bothering him. He had about 20 pounds of ice on his knee after the game. I mean, he was all banged up.
Yeah, his foot was bothering him. He thought he was going to hit something soft when he kicked last.
Well, look, I mean, Tyrese Maxey had 15 in the first half, doesn't score the first 21 minutes of the second half, and then had 10 straight points the final 3 minutes, hit a huge step back three to put the Sixers ahead late, and then Spencer Dinwiddie had a chance to tie the game. Joel gets a big block, and the Sixers find a way to escape with a win that they did not deserve to get. They played really bad. They had Harden, who was their one good, consistent offensive player, get ejected. Harden finally made some twos in the game. But, you know, now they come back in 36 hours. They play a game Saturday afternoon again in Brooklyn in game four, and we'll see if they can close the series out or if it starts to go like the series last year with Toronto, where they went up 3-2 and then they were down, you know, it got to within 3-2 and that led to Embiid getting hit in the face late in game six and breaking his orbital bone or whatever he did.
This is a great pool report. I actually am just now reading it. The explanation for Harden, based on the point of contact directly to the groin, it rose to the level of excessive an ejection. And when I first read that, I misread ejection, which was pretty funny. I'm not going to say what.
I'm not surprised.
It was a wild day. It was a wild day in Brooklyn for a series that was very boring until today. All of a sudden now it's not at all boring. And Saturday is going to be interesting because there's going to be a lot of emotions 36 hours after this one's over. They're back playing again.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And then the NBA TV game, which is a series I'm covering. I'm putting my fingers up. I'm covering.
Hey,
I'm
do you get NBA games. TV in Omaha?
I do. As long as the Nuggets and Wolves and Thunder are not playing on it. It's a whole new world seeing this Thunder's Wolves series. I was watching that game last night. Like
the Nuggets, wow. Too.
Yeah. What did I say? Thunder and Wolves.
Thunder Wolves. Yeah. They're playing. I hear you.
Yeah. You're right. It's like a whole new world seeing these games. It's like, whoa. What's. Who's that guy?
That's the guy I've been hating on for the last few years.
Anyway, I am.
He didn't vote for Embiid McMahon for MVP, and now he's throwing him out of playoff games. Probably going to call for him to get suspended soon. He's just totally off the Embiid train, Windhorst.
Well, what we better review tomorrow. We'll bring in Joel Embiid's permanent record so we can evaluate whether or not there should be any further discipline.
book Dumars for NBA Today. Hey, I told you guys this. Dumars took more of a victory lap for suspending Draymond Green than he did in either of the Pistons' two titles. he got more FaceTime for this than Finals MVP.
Well, he was bumped out of the headlines by Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks knocked him out. And by the way, McMahon, you know, I did TV this morning from 8 a.m. until noon, and McMahon's video of Dylan Brooks.
Some beautiful footage.
What's funny is he was the only player who I shot video of, and there was a reason for that. there was a reason for that, because it's like, oh, Dylan didn't do a whole lot, but you never know. And voila, there we go.
Magic.
Yep. I told Stephen A. Stephen A. was you know, totally doing what Dylan wanted him to do, which was to challenge LeBron. To go for 40 and ignore, you know. I'm not saying that he'd have to ignore AD, but that's what the Grizzlies want. They want the Lakers to focus on anybody but AD, even if it's LeBron. And Stephen A. is just riling, going crazy, you know, totally doing it. And I was like, Stephen A, when Dylan picked out those white glasses and that plaid jacket with no undershirt and that diamond encrusted chain, he wore that for you. He wore that for you, Stephen A. And
I will say this, it's not an unusual outfit
I've seen Dylan wear similar fits before.
Your greater point is he went in there with a plan, and executed that plan quite well. And it's funny because he didn't make much of an impact in the game. He only played 23 minutes, had more shot attempts than points, and was in foul trouble.
It was a very Dylan Brooks game all the way around.
And somehow the game became all about him after it ended.
I said he should speak at Harvard Business School with the way that he commandeered that. And after like round three of everybody, you know, demanding that LeBron go get him, I was like, he's having champagne for breakfast because he's the big winner.
I do love this. You know, this proves Jordan's better than LeBron. Nobody would ever say anything like that about Jordan. Like, back to the Bad Boys Pistons, fellas. Second time we've mentioned them. But, like, do you think they were just, like, I mean, kissing Jordan's butt his whole career?
There's a lot of revisionist history.
Yeah. I don't think
game three, McMahon?
What's that?
Are we going to see Ja in game three?
Listen, man. I know that he basically told us after game one, he didn't think he was playing in game two. I know Woj was reporting like there wasn't optimism. I was surprised. It's a bruise. And they didn't even list contusion on the injury report. They listed right hand soreness. Hopefully that little mitten with the fingers cut off that he put on for the game after not wearing it into the arena is going to help. I don't know the science behind it, but hopefully that'll help and we can see him game three.
Well, even if he plays game three, you have to figure he's going to be in some discomfort. He's going to be limited. So I don't know. I've seen guys where I thought they would miss time and come in and score 40. So I don't know. But I know that the Lakers could have levied a knockout blow and didn't. We'll get to that in a minute. So the series I'm covering, I was at 1-2. I didn't go to LA. Came home for the weekend. Still got up at 4:45 today to do television.
Okay, we don't need your whole resume. Go on.
All right. This is a game I was paying attention to. Thank you to Ramona Shelburne.
That's so many violins here. So many violins for all.
By the way, I'd like to thank McMahon for pulling double duty on Saturday to cover.
Ryan's working so hard, he's working from home. He's not going to the games.
Hey, listen, when you reach a certain status, you get time off during the playoffs. Draymond Green, Brian Windhorst.
That's right.
Draymond, another media guy, just taking games off during the playoffs. Doesn't need to be on
your podcast.
Yeah, when's the next podcast?
It's probably already up. It's probably already up.
Yeah, you're probably on the
rollicking right victory by his teammates.
Listen to him though.
genuine stunning development today that Kawhi Leonard was ruled out with a sprained knee. I was at the first two games. I did not see him get hurt, did not see a bobble, a limp at all. He had 38 in game one, where I came on this pod afterwards.
Yeah.
Sunday night. You remember me saying, my God, does he look great? In game two, he maybe wasn't quite as effective, but he still had 31. And part of the reason he wasn't as effective was because the Suns were aggressively double teaming him. They made that adjustment.
He still looked pretty damn good to me.
Yeah, there was no way you'd look at them and say, oh, man, like he's showing any signs of anything. And so this was jaw-dropping. Not only that, he wasn't on the injury report.
He played 39 minutes in game two. It was bizarre.
Let me tell you something. He, barely came out of the game in the first half. Like, it wasn't like, oh, my gosh. Nothing in their actions indicated that they were worried about this injury. They played him at center down the stretch of the game. Not that four versus five.
Who they play at center tonight? Like Bones Highland, I think.
Terrence Mann in the end. We'll talk about that in a second. Not on the injury report.
This was the quote from Lawrence Frank, the president of basketball operations. You talked about it before the game because they said he aggravated it at the end of game one. Symptoms got worse after game two. Obviously, if we weren't comfortable with him playing in game two, we wouldn't have. But after the game, things didn't get better. They got worse. So we would rule him out and kind of take it day by day. It's a very odd thing, as you said, to say something got worse that was never listed on the injury report.
And they played 39 minutes.
We need to get Joe Dumars on NBA Today for some explanation of this one.
Well, put it this way, it required enough explanation that Lawrence Frank called a pregame press conference.
Well, I think that's going to... I think that old Stevie B is going to be coming up with a little change for this one.
I mean, under the rules that it normally happens, yeah.
A knee sprain supposedly suffered in game one. He's not on the injury report until he's ruled out the day of game three, like hours
day
before
of,
game three.
It was at 4:00 Eastern. It was 3:45 Eastern. I was within five hours.
It was after shoot around. They had shoot around, and then they ruled him out.
Oh, I get. Okay, I guess that's
no. I'm just saying it was like 12:30 Pacific time. They had shoot around, and he didn't play.
But it,
whatever. Okay. It was hours before.
Yeah. No. I mean. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Okay.
I don't think that will result in a fine, if only because that tends to be the other way. If a guy goes from being like out to playing, it usually is when it is. But who knows.
All right. Well, so in this game, the Clippers threw, I'd say Ty Lue, I mean, he just is a mad scientist. He threw everything he can at the Suns, and they did an impressive job taking this game down to the last minute. Put Norm Powell into the starting lineup in place of Kawhi, and all Norm did was score 42. Probably contributed at a higher level than even could have been expected from Kawhi had Kawhi started. I'm not probably not defensively, but certainly Norm Powell coming off the bench and getting 42 was not an expected outcome.
I got a trivia question.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective Trivia.
Oh,
there you go. What do you got?
As I'm scanning the SIG Slack channel, he is the fifth player in Clippers history with a 40-point playoff game. Can you name the other four?
Kawhi.
Yes.
Blake.
Nope.
Did Lou CP? Williams have a 40-point playoff game?
No, sir.
CP?
No, sir.
Elton Brand?
Yes. That was I didn't think you'd get that one.
Wow, that's a good one.
So
we have two more?
Two more.
Eric Piekowski.
No. Stop what, stop doing
Cornhusker dance. What era are we talking?
Present and well into the past.
No. Bill Walton?
No. Can you get the present? Come on, dude.
Paul George?
Yes. Okay. And then the other one, there's the last one, there's an asterisk on it.
Was it like the San Diego Clippers, the Buffalo Braves or
something? That's why I said, is it Bob McAdoo?
Yes, it is. All right. Good job.
There you go.
All right. Good. Hey, nice job. Well, good trivia question.
That was a good trivia question.
Congratulations.
And by the way, you know what? We've been critical, or at least I've been critical. I think we've probably all been critical of Russell Westbrook on the spot. Yeah. But you know what? Yeah. Like, in all seriousness, this game showed the way Russell Westbrook can still be an effective NBA player. Yeah. Like, he's not a guy that's necessarily, to me, very effective if you're trying to win a championship and he's playing on that kind of a team. And I'm not saying this to be denigrating, but like, this Clipper team as constructed today is like a 8-seed-ish team, right? That's like essentially be trying to be a 500 team. If you have Russell Westbrook on a team like that, where he's gonna have the ball in his hands all the time, he could still be a very effective player. You saw that in this game. He had 30-12-6.
30-12-8.
Yeah. And he had 30-12-8
and three steals. It was all over the place. He was playing really hard. Like, he was a really effective player for them today because he had the ball in his hands all the time, surrounded by shooting. You have him in a situation like that, he could still be a very effective player.
Well, one of the things that's, first off, I don't understand why, but he actually did shoot the ball better when he came to the Clippers. I don't know why it would be a difference, but he shot the ball respectably as a Clipper versus as a Laker, where he was shooting from three-point range in the 20s and routinely throwing up air balls. He did throw up an air ball in a three tonight, but for some reason in those 21 games, he shot like 36% from three. Okay. And then the other thing is, when you watch him play in this series, he has high turnovers. He has missed shots, but his playing with force that he plays with has been extremely effective. Mm-hmm. He is, for the most part, been able to impose his will without getting out of control. Even in the game where he was 3 of 19, he took some bad shots, but he took
100 bad shots in that game, but he also made hustle plays.
Right.
Could have been more than 16.
When he
fair.
Would push like the ball. When he would push the ball in transition, he really found ways to impact the game that way. And in the last couple of games, he's been pushing the ball in transition and going for the basket and getting it done. And he has 30 points tonight. And you totally forget that he, what the player he was with the Lakers. Like, you're watching the game and you're evaluating him as one of the best players on the court, because that has been the case for the last two games. So anyway, what I want to say is that Devin Booker, after the All-Star break, was a top five player in the league. Okay.
Devin Booker when healthy.
Right.
I mean, honestly, because he was before he got hurt too.
Right. But especially after he took that break and came back. The last couple of games, he has been the alpha for the Suns. KD has been fine in this series. He had a stretch in game one where he didn't score. He was not effective at the end of the fourth quarter of game one, but it wasn't like he played poorly, and he's played fine the last couple of games. He's made decent amount of plays, scored in isolation. You know, tonight got to the line. This is a big issue for the Suns, is getting to the line. It's something that is one of their weak spots because they're all mid-range. Durant got to the line 11 times. They got Phoenix in, or they got the Clippers into the penalty a lot, and they really worked on that. But Devin Booker has been the alpha.
Yeah.
So he goes for 45 in this game, absolutely killing from mid-range and inside. And he also has been really strong defensively. Like, this was a guy who was regarded as a weak defender not too long ago. He's as good as anybody on their team defensively. And Monty Williams knows it. He'll give him, like today when Westbrook was really causing problems, they put Booker on him. I mean, talk about something you didn't think you'd see. Westbrook being a problem with scoring the ball, and Monty deciding that his best option was to go to Devin Booker. And so, like, I'm just going to say, I don't know what's going to happen in this series. I mean, I would say that the Suns getting back home court with Kawhi hurt, they'd have pretty good leverage at this point. But Devin Booker is really, really looking like this might be a special run for him. And he certainly was in this game. I am expecting Durant to have a couple of transcendent performances. I'm sure it won't be too long where he's sniffing 40. But the fact that Durant can play three sort of B minus to B plus performances, and the Suns to still be in this kind of position, is an indication of just how strong Devin Booker has become.
Yeah, and if we're grading on the KD curve, these were C performances, right?
There.
I mean, these on his curve, he didn't really look comfortable a lot of the time. There was a lot of times where he was just staying in the corner, not involved, and then, you know, there were a lot of possessions where he didn't look comfortable. I mean, he had six turnovers. I mean, he put one off the, put one shot
side of the backboard.
Yeah, the side of the backboard. He just never really got in a rhythm, and he's good enough to where he doesn't get in a rhythm, and he ends up with 28 points on 8 of 15 shooting. I mean, that's how good Kevin Durant is. But it's right now, this is very clearly Devin Booker's team. Which, you know, look, you can say, hey, if Kevin Durant's your second best player, you got a chance to really do something special. The problem is it does fall off pretty drastically after that. Ayton's been kind of just a guy, and CP3 is
Ayton was not great tonight, but he's been okay the first two games.
Well, and again, the minutes, those three guys, 45 minutes for Devin Booker, 42 minutes for Kevin Durant, 41 minutes for Chris Paul. Chris Paul's averaging 39 minutes. The rest of their team stinks. This is the problem for the Suns. Can they do that for 2 months? Like, to me,
Torrey Craig has played three excellent games.
Right. So they're getting great Torrey Craig games. That's probably not going to continue. They'll have other guys that might step up, but like, their depth is a huge problem. They have to rely on those guys to an immense degree. And to me, like, the Suns need to win, almost have to win the next two games. They have to get this series over with. Paul George is not playing. Who knows if Kawhi is going to be out there or not. They cannot afford this series to go to at least six games. They have to get it over in five. They have to get their guys a break, because the Nuggets could very well sweep Minnesota. They're going to be sitting there rested and ready to go. Suns are going to have to go play at altitude. And yeah, I like the stylistic matchup for Phoenix, but this Suns team is going to run out of gas if these guys have to play six games or seven games in this first round, and then turn around and go to altitude to play a rested Denver team, and then have to go on to play after. Like, it's just, they have so little depth, and they're relying so heavily on these. Like, those guys shouldn't have had to play 42 and 45 and 41 minutes to beat the Clippers without Kawhi and without Paul George.
Well, like, they were up 13.
That's not good.
Well, first off, real quick, Chris Paul hurt his hand in game two, had x-rays, were negative, got treatment, was able to play. We all know the history of Chris Paul's hand injuries. I don't know if one has to do with the other, but I'm just going to say that, and then I'm going to say that he was 5 of 18 shooting in this game, 1 of 8 from three-point range, and 0 of 2 from the line. And right at the end of the game, when there was they needed some, you know, free throws to ice it, he got the ball inbound and then hot potato passed it to.
Well, I was right Kevin after Durant. he whiffed two free throws.
That's
too.
Right.
Well,
right,
maybe he can borrow.
Pass it to Durant.
Yeah, the Grizzlies are in L.A. Maybe he can borrow Ja's mitten. What?
Oh, McMahon, you're the best.
Trying to help.
You know what I want? I want some reporting for Tim McMahon for when he manages to mosey on over to Los Angeles about what's going on with this mitten. I want an in-depth story on the mitten. What's in it? Is there some kind of like stimulation in it? Is there padding? Like what's going on with the mitten? I want to know.
Well, it keeps one's hand warm.
But it had the fingertips open.
Yeah, the fingers. I want it. Let's just lay it out for Sunday.
You have to be able to use your phone. You have to keep your
hand Sunday from Los Angeles. Let's get a live report from Los Angeles on the pod Sunday from Monday on the mitten and its impact. And
Ja's not using his phone nearly as much these days.
Anyway, so this game's a 13-point game early in the fourth quarter. It looks like they're going to put it away. The Suns were a little bit disorganized in the first half of this game, bumbling, stumbling a little bit. But they sort of got control of the game in the third. And then Ty Lue, because he's Ty Lue, puts out basically an all five guard lineup.
Yes.
How tall is
Terrence Mann? Because he was the biggest
guy out there. He's listed at 6'5".
Russ is bigger than him, I think.
I think Mann is. Russ is 6'4", I think Mann's 6'5".
Yeah.
But so still,
they had Norm Powell in a playoff. Yes.
What's Norm Powell like, 6'4"?
I think he's 6'4".
They're all about the same size. Terrence Mann, Norm.
No, Norm Ross is 6'3". Eric Gordon.
Right. Who's 6'3". Russ, they were running a Russ at center lineup. That's what they were doing. Russ was the biggest and strongest guy on the court.
And then
but they did have when the Suns put Ayton into the game, they had Eric Gordon or Terrence Mann on him. So they were rotating between Eric Gordon at center and Terrence Mann at center.
Yeah, they had
and it worked. By the way, it worked.
6'3", 6'3", 6'5".
They got back into the game. They were trapping like crazy.
Bones had that three rattle in and out. Would have had him down too with like 18 seconds left. I don't know how it didn't go down.
And Bones had. By the way, Bones and I didn't. I wasn't in the building tonight, so I wasn't able to watch it as closely. Bones had 20 points tonight. His quickness and speed in the half court definitely makes a difference. He and Chris Paul, I was getting Jose Alvarado vibes because that happened like game 2-3 last year in the first round.
Yeah.
They had already had, I think, something happen in the regular season. I might not have it 100% right, but like by game 2-3, it was clear that Alvarado was going to be an instigator. Well, Bones and CP, I've already been at each other's chests. And then right at the end of game 2, when there was a late timeout, the game was decided that the Suns were going to win. CP like approached Bones, and I don't know what was being said, but two of the referees immediately came in to break it up.
Wait, was Scott Foster with three little T's involved in that breakup? Or
I don't remember which Scott Foster's on the court, but I don't remember which of the two officials were there. I could accurately report that. So just keep a little eye on that because Bones outplayed him tonight. So it was yes, what you're saying, Bontemps, is exactly true. Monty acknowledged the minutes thing before the game is a concern, and he tried to get more minutes for those guys in the first half. He played Damian Lee more minutes in this game than he had in 1 and 2 combined, trying to get them a rake.
Look, they better get it done in 5. They got a chance to get it done, especially if Kawhi can't play, which who knows if he's going to be able to play or not. Like they can't mess around. Like any extra game for them is just killer.
How is a knee sprain day to day?
How does a knee sprain, how do you sprain your knee and then just keep playing with nothing on it? I don't think he was wearing anything extra on it.
I don't know.
My eight years in college did not result in a medical degree. Hence my confusion.
Well, the media asked Lawrence Frank a number of questions trying to get drilled down on this, and he just wouldn't give it.
Was he ducking and dodging?
Well, I mean, I appreciate him going out there. Probably because Ty is so tired.
Well, again, saying the symptoms got worse after he played 39 minutes in game two from an injury he seemed to have suffered in game one is just, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Anyway, before we go, McMahon, I just wanted to get your feel for Lakers Grizzlies, which has a gigantic one on Saturday night.
Yeah, honestly, man, it feels like a coin flip type of series. As you said, the Lakers had a golden opportunity and did not cash it in. But you know what? Let's not act like it's some kind of shock that the Grizzlies won without Ja Morant, okay? Because Tyus Jones, they call him the best backup point guard in the NBA.
He is the best backup point guard in the NBA.
And the Grizzlies are now 34-15 when Tyus Jones starts over the last two seasons, including playoffs. And they play a different style with him. You know, it's obviously, look, Ja's a superstar. He's going to have the ball in his hands vast majority of the time. And I don't think Ja's a selfish player, but the ball moves in a much different way when Tyus Jones is playing point guard. Just because, look, Ja is capable of taking over games and tends to take over these stretches of every game where Tyus is a pure run the team, move the ball. And then they are a better defensive team without Ja. That's just the reality of the situation. So, but still, that's their superstar. And man, Anthony Davis, like, you know what is a surprise? Him getting completely dominated by Xavier Tillman Sr., the Grizzlies' third string center, who's had to fill a starting role since Steven Adams and Brandon Clark went down. So I guess the two things I'm most curious to see are, how does Anthony Davis three things. One, is Ja going to play? Two, how does Anthony Davis respond after just a real, honestly, an embarrassment of performance in game two? And three, like the Dylan the villain versus, LeBron the bear. Like, let's see how that poke bear responds, right? I definitely, and Wendy, you obviously have been around LeBron more than anybody, and certainly much more than me. I would anticipate that LeBron will do a high road with a little passive aggressive jab for a response.
Well, here's my guess would be he'll take the high road, not only because it's what he's done, but because it's the smart move for the team.
Yes.
But if/when he sees a moment to show him up, he'll show him up is what my guess is. But I don't think you're going to see him come out and take 12 shots in the first quarter because Dylan Brooks said, I don't respect the guy unless he gives me 40.
Well, it's hard to outsmart LeBron. And if you suck LeBron and trying to play hero ball at the expense of the Lakers, that would be pretty clearly outsmarting him. And I don't anticipate that. Curious though, also to see, and obviously we don't know who will be officiating this game. How tightly are they going to officiate Dylan Brooks defending LeBron? Brooks also did some lobbying in that regard. So
no question.
Yeah, that.
Well,
that
Dylan also said he's not the Heat and Cavs LeBron, which he is not. That's true.
He only averaged 29, 8-6 this year.
Well, I know, but I also think it's fair to say that he's not
that player. And look, let's be honest. Through the first two games of this series, he's not been that impactful by LeBron standards. Like, he's had fine games, but he's sort of had, I mean, you talked about it, Brian, after game one, he was basically invisible down the stretch of that game. It was Rui Hachimura and Austin Reeves who carried him home. And in game two, I mean, he had 28-12 in that game, but it wasn't like he really put his imprint on it. He kind of accumulated those stats over the course of the game because he's a great player and got some offensive rebounds and did some stuff. But I thought part of the reason Xavier Tillman got off in that game was because the Lakers decided LeBron couldn't guard Jaren Jackson Jr. after the way he was working him in the post in game one. And so they had AD out guarding Jaren in game two. And Xavier Tillman kept getting these rolls to the rim where AD was late coming over and he was getting layup after layup after layup out of it. Mm-hmm. So I'll be curious to see if they switch that back. To McMahon's point, we came into the series saying Anthony Davis is the swing guy in the series. If he's the best player on the court, like he was in game one, Lakers are probably going to win. He certainly wasn't in game two. Memphis won that game. So this, a lot of it comes down to what, like you said, Tim, what performance we're going to get from AD on Saturday. And we talked about this coming into the series. If the Lakers want to win this series, I think they absolutely have to win game three, because you have five games in 9 days starting potentially through game seven, starting on Saturday, and starting with game four, you got a game every other day, about 2,000 miles apart. And as this series drags on, you got the youngest team in the playoffs, maybe in the league in Memphis, against a super old Laker team. That
poor McMahon having to fly back and forth.
Well, it's a brutal travel series to cover for sure. But if that, to me, that travel really advantages Memphis as the series goes along because of the amount of mileage and toll that's going to take on the Lakers. And the Lakers already look kind of tired in game two when they've had two games in what, 9 days, three games in 12 days.
Let's also see how the Grizzlies handle the temptations of Los Angeles.
That's true.
Let's see. I'm going to go. You said the Lakers need to win game three. They've got to win all their home games. They've got to, they stole home court, but the Grizzlies had the best home court record in the NBA this season. I don't think that the Lakers are going to win twice in Memphis in this series. So the Lakers, they took home court from them. And if they handle their business at home, they win the series. If they don't, I don't think they do.
All right. Definitely worth watching. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you to Jackson. Thank you to Bontemps as well.
I can't believe you got through this pod without Brian talking about this Cavs-Knicks thriller that we're going to see Friday night at the Garden.
Well, it is going to be great, but it's 2 a.m.
First Garden playoff game with full fans in a decade.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the Cavs are going to be successful Friday, but we'll see if they can come out Sunday. They can pull out a split. They'll have done well if they do that.
There's only going to be like 97 playoff games between the time this pod comes out and the next one. A lot of good games this weekend. Should be fun.
And thanks to Jackson for staying up all night putting this together. So because we're all going to sleep. All right, thanks for the Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.